This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how a travel advisor can get you perks you didn't know existed, and which flight deals are actual deals, and which are clickbait. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
When I first started traveling, most of my travels were solo. Because I was mostly alone, the observations and perceptions about the places I visited and the cultures I experienced were all influenced mainly by my own identity as a white woman. But then I met Lucas. When Luke and I started traveling together, I suddenly had intimate insight into the experience of someone with a different identity. I could see firsthand how he was treated differently in some cultures than I was. And I also noticed how in some spaces, he would feel safe when I was feeling anxious. And throughout our travels over the years, we've both noticed how our experience of travel is different than when we traveled solo. Whether it's our race, our gender, ability, or whoever we're traveling with, our identities can shape how we move through the world, how we're perceived, and how safe we feel. But travel media doesn't show this. It often presents a narrow version of what travel looks like, and interracial couples are rarely a part of that picture. For these couples, traveling together across cultures and borders can bring unique challenges, but it can also lead to really special and meaningful moments. Today, we're talking to Katie and Bavik. They just returned to Canada after spending 14 months traveling through Asia and beyond. And we're going to dig into what the experience was like and how their shared identity as an interracial couple shaped their trip. This is Curious Tourism, the podcast focused on making travel better for people and the planet. I'm Erin Hines, travel writer and content creator, and I'm joined by my producer, Katie Lohr.
That is me. And if you enjoy the show, Erin and I would love for you to support it in some way. And it's really easy to do so. First, you can make sure that you're actually subscribed to the show on your favorite podcast app right now. And second, keep an eye out for all the cool stuff that we're posting on the internet, all the cool stuff that Erin's posting on the internet. And if you like any of it, send us an email or you can review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
And on that note, you can also get in touch with us directly on social media or by email. All our contact info is in the show notes. Well, hi, Katie and Bavik. Welcome to Curious Tourism.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To kick it off, we always like to chat a little bit about the latest in travel news, travel trends, or just like things that we're seeing online. So I can get started and share what I saw today on social media. I love seeing people argue in the comments about things, especially related to responsible tourism. So I always like, I'm keeping an eye out for those discussions. And something really interesting came up today. It is currently trekking season in Nepal. So a lot of people have just come back from summiting Everest. So I've been seeing a lot of Everest content, people who are posting their own summit videos. But in this particular video, the person had included a shot of one of the bodies that is up on Everest. Yeah. And for anyone who doesn't know, a lot of people do die as they try to summit Everest. It's an extremely dangerous trek, probably one of the most dangerous in the world. And when people do pass away on the mountain, their bodies are typically left there because it is too much energy and would put other people's lives at risk to try to bring them back down off the mountain. So people who are climbing have to climb past these bodies. And a lot of climbers do put effort into bringing gifts or like bringing mementos or paying homage to these bodies as they trek past. So this person had included a clip of one of those bodies, and in the comments, people were really upset about this, saying that it was disrespectful, that they felt uncomfortable with the fact that this person had included it. Other people accused this person of rage bait, saying, are you just trying to like get people upset in the comments? Is that why you included this clip?
Could you see was there anything identifiable about the person?
I think there were people in the comments speculating on who specifically it was, because everyone, like, you can research online and find out exactly who is who and where they are.
Yeah.
So there were people speculating about that. I don't know enough about this to like know myself. And to be honest, like when the clip flashed by, I didn't necessarily clock that that's what I had seen. I like suspected it, but it wasn't like completely obvious to me until I saw the discussion in the comments. But yeah, I think it's like an interesting question, because like it is a reality of the Trek. And maybe like you could argue that because it is a reality, like it's important to show that reality. But I just don't know if like on social media, for potentially social media clout, is the right avenue for that. People in the comments also were saying that it was someone who had passed away like quite recently, which I think makes it a little more insensitive. So I don't know, like, part of me thought like it should be taken down, that like maybe this should be reported and removed. But I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Honestly, it's like really complicated. I mean, first off, like the person's family, like the person passed away recently, so it's like still so fresh for them. I think I agree with you on the point that I don't know if this is the right medium for it, especially for someone that's trying to grow their own page. It feels like there's like a major conflict of interest.
Like
there.
It's exploiting.
Yeah.
The tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like the reality of it is this is what can potentially happen. So others need some awareness on it to make the right decision for them when they decide to hike. So I don't know. It's complicated. I don't know how I feel in either direction. I think I'd be like you, like kind of just hovering over that. Is this a reportable thing or not? Because I just don't know what the right answer is.
Like when I think about myself, like what I would do, I don't know that I would pull out my phone and take a video of a body. Like I've been to Ghats, like in Nepal and Varanasi in India, and like I never filmed that. Like it doesn't feel appropriate to film. Mm-hmm. Talking through it with you both makes me realize that this like ties really well into something I often talk about, which is context in the content that we post. And I feel like that's the kind of context that you write about in a caption that you don't need to depict like visually, potentially.
Yeah,
I feel like it's kind of like, I guess, how we feel. And we talk a lot about like people who post videos of children online. And it just feels like if you're using that to grow your own page, if you're using that to get bigger, like you probably don't have permission from the parents. Like it's just, it feels gross. Like that's not the right way to do things. Saying and talking about the fact that people die is a good thing, maybe without showing it, because so many people, like, they just glorify it. There's a lot of negatives of doing it as well. There's a lot of other mountains you can climb and other things you can do. But it's like on social media, it's like glorified. And it's good to see the negative sides as well.
Mm-hmm. This issue actually like has come up so many times for me in the past, like even months, because there's also, I don't know if you've heard about how Juliana Marins in Indonesia passed away, a Brazilian backpacker. And I'm late hearing about this, but like have not been able to stop thinking about it. And it's, I've been thinking about it in the context of like how you see this hike portrayed on social media all the time. Like it's just like a walk in the park. And like, I think it's not a good thing. I think people like don't, they need to be real about these experiences. Like hiking Everest is not an easy thing. Like it's not for everyone to do. And I don't think Rinjani is for everyone to do either. Mm-hmm. And I worry that social media like makes people think that these hikes are, but a lot of them are extremely dangerous.
So we didn't do Rinjani. So I guess we can't really speak to that one, but we did Mount Ijen. And we did a little differently than other people. Like a lot of people leave at midnight because they want to go see the blue fire. So you get to the top and then you hike down into the crater. We decided not to do that. It was supposedly closed when we went anyways, but I think people went down and we ended up starting our hike at sunrise instead of in the middle of the night. But we've seen all these videos like from our friends and other people. And it's like, it's just this line of people in the dark climbing up this very steep crater. And it's just so dangerous. It's so, so dangerous. It's like a mill.
Yeah.
So
you see like the gravel like slipping under their feet, people are like falling on top of each other, and it's just like one wrong step and it's just,
yeah,
but they just, they're like, I need to see,
and
this.
If you
this
fell
thing.
And you went into the lake, you're dead.
Yeah, oh
like
my
it's
gosh.
The most acidic lake
so
in the world, so yeah. I don't know. It's not an enjoyable, like, I feel like it wouldn't be an enjoyable experience as a traveler to be there, yeah. But also it's just, it's so unsafe. And like the guides are really in a way responsible, or some responsible for like keeping people safe if they like get injured, et cetera.
Mm. This is like, I think a lot of the crux of what the debate I've seen around what's happened on Rinjani is about, like people are discussing like whether it was like a personal responsibility thing, like you have to know for yourself whether you're capable of this hike, or whether like the onus really does fall on the guides. And like in a perfect world, it should be the guides. Like when we trekked in Nepal, our guide sat with us and looked at our equipment and made sure that we had what we needed. We worked with him in advance to figure out like what trek was doable for us, especially like I have a knee injury. Like he worked with us to decide what was safe and what was doable for us and what would be like a nice experience for us, not just like painful the entire time. And I don't know that guides like all over the world are doing that. So I don't think travelers should have the expectation that like they are. I think we need to go in like with the mindset of like personal responsibility first, yeah. And let's hope that the guide like also is looking out for us.
Ijin, one of the things that they did that I guess had been a recent change a couple of years ago is you have to get a health form before you're allowed to hike.
Oh.
So you have to have like a medical clearance. I would say it's like a bit more of a, just a box to check,
yeah.
Rather than like, they checked our blood pressure, but that was pretty much about it. They didn't ask us like anything about like our medical history,
yeah.
But like the concept is a good thing.
Yeah.
Going back to the taking photos of bodies, I can't help but go back to, Aaron, I don't know, you're not deep in the YouTube space, but there was a time when I think one of the Paul brothers put out a video from the suicide forest in Japan.
Don't get me started.
And there was a video of a body in there. And that blew up on the internet, and it definitely got taken down. And so I think if like that's the standard across the board, then I think that should be the standard across the board.
It just sucks so much. Like it sucks so much of the lengths that people are willing to go to grow on social media.
Okay, so what story have you brought?
It's not really a story, but I think something that we're seeing like a lot on social media now is like glorification of financial irresponsibility to travel. It's amazing how much of the world you can see if you use your credit card irresponsibly. And, you know, my life, because I'd rather have no money than no life on a random Tuesday. And like, I mean, we took 14 months off and travel, but we do not believe that you should just spend all your money on travel and make these irresponsible decisions. And it's like, it's so terrible to see people glorifying it, especially people that maybe like make a solid income from travel. So that's not their actual situation. It's just, it's so bad. I don't know. It literally drives us crazy. Like, I think you could do both. You can be financially responsible and you can travel. And at the end of the day, no matter what trip you go on, like at some point you will probably come home or your travels will probably at least slow down and you need to live the rest of your life. So you have no emergency fund, if you have no savings, if you have nothing for your retirement,
yep,
like that's
totally
not
agree.
Something that we should
this
be
is
glorifying.
Why when I stumbled on you, actually I should tell you, I found your account because my dad found you. He like literally only follows me on Instagram. And then while we were traveling, he sent me your account and he was like, look, two other people like from the GTA, like also doing this.
I'm like not surprised, because when we first started posting, we had like a huge wave of like followers who are in their 50s and 60s, and like so many people had sent us, they're so nice, they'll say like, oh
yeah,
you know, you guys are doing the right thing, I wish I did it at your age, or like I did it when I was your age and it's the best thing ever. So like that doesn't really surprise us. But like that does kind of tie into what we're talking about, because like obviously spending money on travel is a good thing, but I think something, at least for us, something we talk about all the time is like, you can't have everything. So if you're going to prioritize travel in your life, you can't do that while still like having all sorts of other things. You're going to need to choose. Like, we have friends, they're not really big travelers. So maybe they spend more on like going to events here or their house or whatever. And that's the way that they enjoy living their lives. And that's great. For us, like outside of traveling, we spend like very little money on many other things. And if we were going to spend a lot on like a fancy car or like whatever, clothes, video games, whatever, we just wouldn't be able to afford to travel the same way.
Yeah, we're literally the same. Like, we live in a small space. We don't have a vehicle. We've never had a vehicle. Luke and I literally this week, we were like, oh, it would have been nice to go see Coldplay. But then we were
I saw that too.
But that would have cost as much as a flight to the Netherlands. So,
like, those Taylor Swift tickets were like thousands. And I'm like, oh my God, imagine how many weeks we could travel.
And I know people that go to shows like this all the time. It's not for me. Like, I prefer to spend my money on travel, but you're right. It's about priorities. Yeah. It's about like what makes you happy. So if you know that travel makes you happy, it's worth it. I can tell you my financially responsible story from a decade ago, which is that the first long haul trip I did, which was 9 months around South Asia, India, Nepal, I spent, I think it was like $15,000 on that trip. It was a different time. Travel was cheaper. And I came home from that trip owing $500 to my credit card and living with my parents. And I remember crying because I was moving back into my apartment, which I had sublet, and I couldn't pay the rent because I hadn't started my new job yet. And so my dad lent me the money, and I had never in my life taken money from my parents. Like, and I was just crying to him being like, I'm really sorry, but like, I need help. And he was like, it's okay. And he gave me the money. It was like $600. And then when I got my first paycheck, I paid him back immediately. And I remember thinking to myself, that was so irresponsible. I'm never going to come back from a trip with like no money in my bank account again. And so that's why Luke and I had an emergency fund saved to cover like 6 months of living when we came back from our trip. Because we were like, who knows? Like, who knows what'll happen? Might not get jobs right away. You can't predict it. So you are both back in Canada after spending 14 months traveling. I came home from a much shorter long-haul trip last summer, around the same time, actually. And so I know you're probably going through it a little bit right now. It is an adjustment to go from full-time travel back to home life and it's extremely overwhelming. How are you both feeling? What have your first few weeks at home been like?
Honestly, it's been really confusing for the most part. Like, the first week was just trying to set everything back up. It was like really busy. So we didn't really have a lot of time to think. Like, we came back and because we live in Hamilton, we needed a vehicle. Getting to work was like the following week was going to be a challenge otherwise. And so one thing after another, just trying to go through the checklist to kind of get things back up and running. But then kind of once that happened, there was like a bit of a lull where we had a bit more time, but nothing to really fill it with. And like looking at some of like the older memories was kind of like creeping in. I mean, it was nice and comfortable to do it from our couch and stuff like that we're used to. But at the same time, it's like, it was very confusing because like we had something new to do so often. I feel like being home after we were set up, some of that novelty has been like a little bit hard to find.
The honest answer is that we're like alternating between like, yes, it's nice to be home, and like, we just want to catch the first flight out and bounce. I think we were just like rushing, getting everything done, et cetera. And then like the one day Vavik was at work all day and I was like home by myself. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to make a lot of videos for social media and like get organized. And I couldn't because I was like, when I start watching the videos, I get so sad.
Makes you sad.
And I literally just spent the whole day moping. Like, I'd had like a breakup or something.
Honestly, I remember like it didn't really hit me till like 3 or 4 months. Like, that's when it got really bad for me. The first few months I was like kind of cruising, just like keeping myself busy. And then like 3-4 months after we got home, I just, oh gosh, I crashed. I was like so upset because I still have this crisis. I was just like, what is the point of life if all I do is work?
I didn't realize you guys live in Hamilton. I live in Brantford, Ontario.
Oh, you're so close to us.
To me, going to Hamilton is quite novel. And I'm like, ooh, can't wait to go to Hamilton and go to some of the restaurants there. So, like, I'm like the next tier down from your current experience where I'm like, there's nothing to do in Brantford and I can't wait to go to Hamilton and go to one of the restaurants there.
So I know it's always difficult to whittle it down to like the most meaningful or the best experience that you had. So I'm not going to ask you that, but I am going to ask you, what was a meaningful experience that you've been thinking about a lot?
I mean, I get asked that question a lot, actually. The memory that comes back to mind is always the driving a tuk-tuk in Sri Lanka. Like, I remember when we first decided, like, Katie brought it up to me. She's like, hey, I've seen this on social media. We should do this. And I'm like, And I'm like, oh, it's manual. Okay. I'm like, I don't know how
we
to drive.
We didn't know until we were there that it was manual, actually. And Vavik doesn't know how to drive manual.
So we're there and we're learning and then... The lesson's done. I've been able to do it a little bit, but like we're leaving the city and it's like really busy. I'm like, babe, can you handle this? Can you get us out of here? Because I don't think I can do this.
It's so stressful. You're in the middle of traffic and there's like big buses and other tuk-tuks and cars. You're like stall in the middle of the road.
But like we got out of there and like just like every day it was just like a bit of a challenge, a bit more of a challenge. And honestly, it was like the area that I felt like I grew the most. And like it was the thing that when I look back on it, I'm like, this is the accomplishment that I'm like the most proud of throughout the year, that I was like able to do this. And then by the end, like we were 50-50 drivers. Like we both enjoyed it. We'd sometimes fight about who should drive.
Like, do you remember like the first 2 weeks we would never use like the reverse. We would push it out of every spot because we were like, we're having trouble reversing because it's like a bit more finicky. So we literally pushed it.
Yep,
and then
yep.
like the host of a lot of places we stayed, like, why are you doing that?
Yeah, you know, you can just flip it in
reverse.
You
know, you can just reverse it. We were actually the company's like second longest rental ever.
At the time, I don't know about now.
The day we brought it back, we were like 7 weeks. And everyone was like, oh my God, seven weeks.
Oh man, you guys were still out there?
We had 4 weeks and then we just kept extending it because we really
And you
really
still haven't learned how to reverse yet?
No. Only the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was the first 2 weeks.
I love a tuk-tuk. I was in a tuk-tuk in Sri Lanka going up a hill and it could not do it.
Oh, no.
We all had to get out and like push it. But it's so steep. And so we get out, we're walking, it's boiling hot. And this tour bus, like we've been walking for like 20 minutes, we're dying. And this tour bus like pulls up alongside us and the guy rolls down the window and he's like, get in. And they're like blasting the AC and we're just like, oh, thank you. You saved our lives.
Wow.
What about you, Katie? What's your top of mind meaningful experience?
There's a lot of things we talk about all the time, but I think for me, like maybe the most meaningful is when we spent Diwali in India with like Vavik's extended family. So we got married during the pandemic or like the later stages of the pandemic. And we had a small wedding, like partially because we didn't want to spend like a huge amount of money. But so none of the extended family came to the wedding or probably was able to come because they would need visas. It's very complicated for them to just come and visit Canada. So like we'd been married for like 2 years, but I just had only like talked to some people on video chat and I hadn't met them. And like a number of his family too, like maybe they don't speak English very well or speak like very minimal English. And the place where they live, like there's not necessarily a lot of tourists there. Like I think, I don't know, the whole like 3 weeks we were there, I think I saw maybe one other like traveler that wasn't a domestic traveler. So I was like very, very stressed. When we left on the trip, we had like our first couple weeks planned. And then the only other thing that we said is like set in stone for the entire trip is like, we want to be there in India for Diwali. But I was like very stressed because I'm like, oh my God, like I'm so different. And, you know, I don't speak the language and, you know, like, I don't know, everything is just different. Like, I think like gender roles in India are like quite different as well. And like, I'm very much like not for gender roles. So I feel like, oh, am I going to come in and be like a bull in like a China shop? But I had like the most amazing time. Like Vavik's family was amazing. Like they were so, so welcoming. And like, it was just amazing. Like I can believe that I was able to feel so much like part of the family, despite like totally, totally different worlds. Like I was able to connect with people on different things, and like food is kind of like a universal connector. Like when they learned that, like I had learned to make a number of Indian recipes and like curries during the pandemic, and they were so excited to like talk to me about it and show me like, oh, and this is how you make this dish, and this is how you do this, and like teach me Gujarati words. And it's like this lesson that I've learned before traveling, but like just being willing to try and being willing to like put yourself out of your comfort zone, like me trying to say the words even with like a bad accent, or trying to learn or asking questions, like that curiosity and interest, it changes everything.
Oh, that's such a sweet story. So I wanted to chat with you both about traveling as an interracial couple. I know you both have shared throughout your trip some observations about your experience through this perspective. And I'm curious about it because, like, obviously Luke and I are both white. We do, through our travels, notice a lot of differences in our experiences based on gender. So I can only imagine that being an interracial couple adds another layer to this. So to start, I'm curious to know how much you both thought about this before you started the trip, if it's something that you had considered or like had conversations about beforehand, or maybe had experience with in traveling in other countries before.
We did talk about it. Yeah. Just one experience that we have here in like a home more or less is we both have Nexus cards because we live like 1 hour from the US border. And we used to go like once a month because we were obsessed with Trader Joe's. And one time we were crossing with our Nexus card. So in the Nexus line, like they basically never ask you anything because you're a trusted traveler. Yeah. And the guard was like quizzing us on like the nature of our relationship.
We're both wearing wedding rings.
And that had never happened to me before, like traveling with friends or anyone else. Yeah. And I'm just like, is this the experience that other people go through when they're crossing the border? And I literally like held up my hand to him and I'm like, we're married. And I was probably a little bit rude, but I was like, what? Like,
yeah,
we're also, it should be all in your system.
Yeah, this is like,
we're Nexus too.
This is like 2023. So it's like,
I don't know.
And you were going through together.
We were entering into the United States, and like he was just very aggressive with the questions. Mm-hmm. And we both, like, when we drove on through after they passed us, we were like, what just happened?
Yeah.
So is it like something that you talk about beforehand? Like after that, did you unpack it and like talk about like, oh, this is what we'll do in the future? Or is it just one of those things that you just like hope isn't going to happen, and then when it does, like, fly by the seat of your pants and just try to, like, talk around it?
No, we did prepare for it, like, to some degree. Like, so one of the things we did was we ordered extra marriage certificates to have, like, a physical copy with us just in case. Especially, like, in some countries where it may be a little bit more important to have it, just in case, like, if you're staying at a hotel or something like that, just staying with the person of an opposite gender, they may question it to some degree. So we had that with us, and like we had like backup copies stored online on our devices and stuff. But that was like the main thing. Like, we're like, we'll have this with us just in case. Cause what if they take you for like extra screening, or me for extra screening? How do we, like, we have different last names as well. So that adds another layer to it as well. And so we're like, we need to maybe have, like, we should have this just in case this, if a situation arises.
Something that like just comes up all the time is like, we'll see, you know, at a tour or whatever, and the host will introduce themselves to like another couple, and maybe like they're both Caucasian, and they'll say like, oh, your husband this, or your wife this. And they'll always say, like, if they're talking to Vavik, they'll always refer to me as your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Your girlfriend. Like, it's like an illicit thing or something. And he's always like, my wife.
Yeah. And we have wedding rings on. So that's the thing that always gets
all
me.
The time. We'll literally be introducing ourselves in a tour. Like this happened recently in Vietnam. And we're like holding hands, you know, our shoulders are touching, standing next to each other. We show up together. And someone will ask me, like, where are you from? And I say Canada. And they look at him like he's in a different group. And they're like, oh, and then where are you from? Like, we're not together.
But it's not just that. It doesn't just stop there. Because
like, they'll ask me, how long have you been in Vietnam? Yeah. And then they'll ask him, like, how long have you been? Like, we've been together.
Yeah. No, but it doesn't just stop there. So, like, if I say Canada as well, then they'll be like, But wait, where are you really from?
Does it make sense?
And so it's like, I was born here. Like, I have heritage from India, but it's like, it's really hard and it becomes really confusing because I feel like there's curiosity. And I think most people are approaching it with curiosity, but it's a little awkward because like then it makes harder to figure out where my identity lies. Like,
yeah,
creates like a bit of a, it creates confusion for me as well.
I had someone say to me one time that, oh, like, especially in Canada, because everyone, like, we're all technically immigrants, we're all settlers, mm-hmm. so we're all yeah. from somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's a normal question to ask. And I was just like, I guess so, but I feel like my friends who are BIPOC, like, they get asked it in a completely different way than I do, and much more than I ever do, both, like, here in Canada, but, like, in a travel context as well. And then that, like, I think you're right. Like, it probably comes from a place of curiosity. It's just like, there's more appropriate ways to like delve into that curiosity, like have a relationship with someone before you ask those kinds of personal questions.
Yeah. Because if they ask and then like, where are you from? And Vavik says Canada and kind of like, you know, is ending it there, you know, let's talk about something else. But like, then I feel like the repeated questioning gets rude.
Do you find that the experience changes like all over the world? Or would you say like some regions have been harder than others? I would like want to believe that it's easier in North America, but it sounds like it's not. So yeah, have you noticed any trends around that?
I mean, in terms of North America, it is a lot easier in general. I feel like the border is like an example of where it wasn't, but I think more so like in our day-to-day lives, like we're not even like aware of the fact, like we're not really very consciously thinking about the fact that we're an interracial couple. Like we just see it everywhere. Like, and you see so many different combinations and it's just like, it's just a normal thing. Mm. Versus like when we're traveling, we do stand out a bit more because we represent a much smaller minority of couples that are traveling.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do you find that this identity impacts travel decisions or like the way that you approach traveling specific places?
I don't think the fact that we're an interracial couple does.
Like, I don't think we choose destinations based off of it, but I think maybe we expect different behavior. And I guess going back to the earlier question, like we have had very different experiences in like different places for sure. Like there's some places we've been where it's kind of like a non thing. Like I would say whenever I've been in Latin America, like no one cares. No one asks us anything. You didn't even get the where are you really from question. Like super chill. A lot of places in Southeast Asia as well. But like the one thing is I had like traveled to Dubai before, like with someone I had been dating in the past and he was Caucasian and like I just had like whatever, a normal experience. It was good. It was fine. When Vavik and I spent a couple of days in Dubai, like a couple of years ago, transiting to somewhere else, like it was a totally different experience. And it was like the staring was unreal. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. It was so, so different. I don't even know how to explain it.
Yeah. I can kind of understand the mentality of like not making your travel decisions based off of it. And maybe this is a bad analogy, but like I travel with a severe food allergy and I always tell people I don't make my travel decisions based around it. Like I won't choose where I'm going to travel, but the considerations that I take in traveling to those places will change, obviously, because I'm going to have a different experience because of this, but it never stops me from going somewhere that I want to go. If I want to travel somewhere, I'm not going to let that stop me. But like, is it going to make it harder? Yeah. But
yeah, let's take the steps to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So do you have tips you'd like to share for other interracial couples that are planning to travel or thinking about travel and maybe nervous, like just practical things that they can do or talk about ahead of time?
I mean, the only one that we really had in mind that we thought was the marriage certificate, but obviously like when you're thinking of a couple, there's people that aren't married as well that'll be traveling too.
I don't know. I think it's like, it's sometimes you feel like a little upset about it because you can see maybe like other people get treated a certain way. And then when we have the experience, it's like very slightly different. But I guess the thing that we did want to talk about on here is like, it hasn't all been bad too. Like there's a few things that we feel like have been like really advantageous for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, language for sure. Like I speak Hindi, Gujarati, and Punjabi as well. So like, it just, especially when we're traveling through, like, for example, the Middle East, like there's a lot of South Asian migrant workers there. And those are normally people that we have the first contact with at a lot of places like accommodations or restaurants. And the language definitely like reduced barriers. Like it just felt like we could have more, like more than just like the interaction for the sake of the interaction. It was actually like more real interactions, more had nicer conversations that we could have with them. I remember like, I mean, this isn't language related, but just in Sri Lanka, like one of the hosts for an apartment, like, I don't know, we just were able to wake, every day I'd wake up early and he was up as well. And we would just like sit and chat and have tea in the morning together and just have like, just like life conversations. And it was really interesting because his daughters are also in interracial relationships in Denmark. And we were just like, it was just really cool because like there was some things that we could talk about from our perspective and he was kind of just like able to relate to it as well for his kids. But yeah, I think it just made a lot of like genuine interaction. Like it just, if it was, there were interactions that filled my heart.
I think we felt like of the two of us, like local people would be more likely to approach Bhavik for conversation. And I don't know, we thought maybe he was gender, but then you even see with like other travelers, like maybe like a white male who's a traveler, like the conversation would often seem like a little bit more like relaxed and like, I don't know, casual when they were like having a conversation with Bhavik versus when they were trying to have a conversation with someone else.
Like a theory we have is that it's like, I don't know, when someone sees someone like Caucasian, like say in the tourism industry, they see them as a potential customer. And maybe there's like, okay, here's a chance to make some money versus like when they see someone that looks similar to them, it's different. That isn't maybe their top priority.
They view maybe like they see in you like a degree of relatability, which like opens up the conversation a bit more. Because it's totally true. Like I will say when Luke and I travel together, people always approach him before they approach me. Mm-hmm. It always really bothers me. Mm-hmm. But it's typically a transactional discussion. Like it's a tuk-tuk driver, a rickshaw driver, like trying to get us to hop in his vehicle. It's like harder for us to have those kinds of like more in-depth and relatable conversations because we have the language barrier.
I feel like we wouldn't have had like so many of the experiences or maybe we wouldn't have had, but they let us do and they opened us up to so many experiences that we had that just started because someone was interested in talking to you.
Literally, we were in a restaurant celebrating, what were we celebrating in Sri Lanka?
What were we celebrating? Your birthday.
Was it my birthday? We were out for dinner for my birthday and literally this family like sitting next to us at a table just asked to take a picture with us.
They thought it was cool that we were like together.
Yeah.
And so they wanted a picture of like us.
Mm-hmm. And conversation opened up and we kind of just like where tables are side by side, we're talking and they're like, oh, learning about our whole journey. Like we'd already been like 5 or 6 weeks into the tuk-tuk adventure at this point. And they're like, oh, what's your route? Like, where are you going next? And we're like, oh, well, we're going towards Hatton. He's like, my house is near there. Like, you guys should come by on your way. Like, come to our home.
Come for lunch at our home.
Yeah.
And then, like, you connected with their daughter. And, like, she still, like, texts you every so often. She calls you, like, big sister, like, Aki.
Aww.
But, like, an opportunity like that, I feel like, I don't know, maybe it could happen to others as well. But maybe it's a little bit easier for someone to approach us because I look more similar to them. And I think it just added a layer of closeness, like you're saying, like we're just, it's a degree of separation less maybe from their perspective and they're more willing to like take that smaller step.
In Sri Lanka, like a lot of people thought that you were Sri Lankan. And it would be so funny when we were driving the tuk-tuk because like if Alec was driving the tuk-tuk and I was in the back seat, like people would see us and like maybe they'd be like, okay, oh wow, like they're traveling, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But if I was driving and Bhavik was in the back seat, people's like jaws would drop. Like, because I guess you look like you're from there. So like, why is this like white girl driving him around?
We have some GoPro footage because we kept our GoPro attached to the side of these guys coming up on a bike right up next to Katie and talking to her. And then they're like, just like trying to talk to her. And they turn to the back and they see me. And then literally they're just like frozen, like on their motorbike right next to us, just frozen. Their faces are just like, I don't even know what to say right now.
Because at one point you were lying down and then you sat up and they were like, whoa.
They couldn't see so funny.
Yeah.
But people just like, they thought it was so funny.
Yeah.
Like so funny.
Yeah.
And like, we got so excited. That's why we started putting our GoPro out, because we're like, oh, we're going to make the funniest video ever about this.
Yeah.
But now
yeah.
we have like 30 hours of footage and we don't want to sort through it. But like, we definitely have a lot of videos of people being like, huh.
That's amazing. But I guess that kind of also points to how it's just like less common, I guess, especially in some countries, to encounter interracial traveling couples. Do you feel that you're underrepresented? Do you think we need to do a better job like reflecting interracial couple travelers like across travel media, like in ads and like blogs and social media?
I mean, absolutely. I think in general, like, even just taking a step back from interracial couples and just looking at like the BIPOC community, for example, like the representation is significantly less compared to when I see like ads designed for white travelers. And I think like there is definitely a lot of room for it.
Especially in the backpacking community, you very rarely see people that aren't white. I would imagine it feels less accessible to you. It feels like it's not something that's for you if you don't have that representation. Is that a good way of explaining?
Yeah, and even just like seeing it, just like when you see the groups, like it was always like just a group of white people and then like just one brown person, for example, like with them, like especially like if they're from the UK, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But like the thought of even wanting to do that feels so far-fetched because I don't really see others doing it. And like when we started first talking about it, I would think to myself, like, well, that's a nice, like, that's a really nice dream. Like, this is, it's such a beautiful idea, but like, I don't see myself ever doing that. That's not even anywhere in my realm of possible thinking. And I think part of that is also just because didn't really have examples of others that have done this. Like, I don't know a lot of, people like me that are doing this. Maybe there's travelers from India that we would see on our adventure, but very rarely would I see like someone from Canada or someone from the UK or the US like doing what we're doing.
On the opposite side of like us talking about how we feel like local people were more willing to approach Vavik and speak to him, like Vavik told me one day that he felt like other travelers are more seem like they're more willing or open to start a conversation with me than with him.
Yeah.
Like if we're in a group of other travelers.
Yeah. And honestly, that would feel like a little strange. I felt like in some ways it was good because maybe when we're traveling in these places, I'd be more easily accessible. And if anything, it kind of like evened out the conversations, but it was weird because I'm like, actually, I feel like I relate more to you than I do to the people here, but I'm less approachable to you, actually.
I mean, it's something that like I've reflected on like now that I'm older, because in my early 20s, I stayed in hostels like almost exclusively and everyone was white, everyone. Like it was like really rare to encounter someone who wasn't, and it's too bad. Like it shouldn't be like that. And I hope that it changes. Like, I hope I look at like the younger generation, like coming up and traveling, like the Gen Z kids, and like, it looks like it's getting better. So I hope we start to see more diversity, like not just like in terms of what we see represented on social media, but like on the ground, like in the hostels and like in the travel spaces, because it is really important.
What's been really good is seeing other like interracial creators that we've kind of come across doing this. Or other couples that are like, just like messaging saying, hey, we've done this before, or we are doing this. And it's like, oh, wow, okay, there are others. And like having conversations with them, I think is like probably going to be the best avenue for kind of figuring out how I'm feeling on this.
Yeah.
We would go on a lot of tours and sometimes like often, not sometimes, like I'd say 90% of the time, like Vavik was the only person there who wasn't white. And it's like, I think, even like if I was traveling before, you know, like 10 years ago, like I don't think I would have noticed that. But being together, I noticed it. And even like, well, before I had traveled to Tanzania by myself. And I think like that was maybe the first time in my entire life that I'd experienced like being the only like a person of my ethnicity in a room. And you're like, oh, you do notice, like, there are people that don't look like me here, and it's okay. But like, I think so many travelers like just fail to recognize that and how that's like a more challenging or different experience that like Ravik would go through.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being willing to share about your experience. I think it's like really good for people to hear this and like consider it, because like you said, I think a lot of people like are out there traveling and don't think about these things. And I think the more that we learn about each other's experiences, the better we will be at creating a more positive tourism future. It's been so great to chat with you both. We've been like DMing over the last year or so. So it's always nice to like chat with people, even if it's just virtually. So yeah, where can people find you if they want to follow your continuing adventures?
Well, we're going to be continuing posting on Instagram at Katie and Bav. We're doing a little bit of YouTube as well. And we have our blog as well. So at katieandbav.com.
Thanks for listening to Curious Tourism. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to share it with a fellow traveler. If you're feeling extra generous, you can leave us a 5-star review or support us on Patreon. Anything you can do to support the show will help foster meaningful change throughout the travel industry. Curious Tourism is written and hosted by me, Erin Hines, and it's produced and edited by Katie Lohr in Canada's Toronto area. If you want to reach out to us, check the show notes for all the info you need. Stay tuned for a new episode next month, and of course, stay curious.
Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we try to answer one important question. What's really worth knowing in travel today? From engaging destinations to ways to travel better, save more, and see deeper, and conversations with some of the smartest people in travel, from Samantha Brown to Andrew McCarthy, new episodes weekly on voyescape.com and wherever you get your podcasts.